You're listening to a Radio 191 FM podcast.
In the break about veganism, we are both vegan. It's a 100% plant-based show for the time being. Woo! Until Lily comes. Yeah. But it's how long have you been vegan?
I think about 4 years now.
4 years.
Nice. It was kind of like, it wasn't a day I decided I was vegan. It was more just like, I was kind of reducing things, and then suddenly I was like, oh, I think I've been vegan for a little bit. And I just went with it.
Yeah. And so was that just like you were flatting and it just sort of happened? Or?
Yeah, so I was flatting, and it first started out with me not wanting to buy meat because it was expensive. Yeah. And then I was doing an environmental degree and really realizing like the impacts, and then I became lactose intolerant, as a lot of people do in their like adulthood, and it's really disappointing if you like milkshakes.
And you can get great vegan milkshakes though.
Yeah, you can. Burger Fuel, the soy ones.
Oh, Burger Fuel as well. I was going to say Burger Plant. They have some good vegan stuff. Yeah. Well, obviously all of it is vegan.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah.
But I cut that out, and then by that time it was just eggs, and I was already eating vegan stuff if I was going out to eat. So it kind of just happened, and I was like, this is pretty easy, and I like this. So
nice. Yeah. For me, I was six years vegan, something like that.
Nice.
I sort of learned about a bunch of this stuff when I was in high school, and I was like, this is probably a good thing to do, but wasn't quite ready to make the plunge. It wasn't until I met a friend who like was vegan and had been for quite some time that I was like, oh, you can just do that and it's fine. You know, like before I was vegan, I was in that category of like, I thought it was like this weird sort of fringe thing that like very few people did, but then it was like, oh, you can just do that. And then I went to Halls of Residence, and you could just tick the box, and then all of a sudden you're vegan. And that's what I did back at the Halls in Wellington. And say what you will about Hall food, the vegan food is better than the
I've heard that too. I wasn't vegan when I went into Halls, but people would say at least go vegetarian in the Halls because the food is better.
Yeah. I've heard as well they do the Meatless Mondays or like Mindful Mondays in the Halls these days.
I think it's a lot better now than it was.
Yeah. Because I've heard it's really controversial, and like there are a lot of people who are like still pretty anti it. And
just having a Monday, that's...
Yeah.
Wow.
I know, it blew my mind as well, but...
Yeah, obviously, like, from the standpoint of both of us being vegan, that seems crazy to be like, whoa.
Yeah. And, like, it's totally something that I, like, keep forgetting how much of a bubble I'm in with it.
Yeah,
I feel like I'm around lots of vegans.
With myself too, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, let's play a little bit more music, shall we? We were just talking about Jungle. You're a fan of Jungle?
Yeah, I really enjoy Jungle, yeah.
Yeah.
I should have gone to their concert earlier this year, and I'll forever regret not going.
Me too, to be honest. They're just so good. They're from the UK. I did not realise they're from the UK. They have not UK vibes to me.
Yeah, and as like the weather warms up, I feel like they're so like the music you play in the garden while you crack open a couple ciders and celebrate your last exam, you know?
It's the good life. Summer in Dunedin really truly is a beautiful thing. Yeah. So whip out those UE booms. Become a public menace and play Jungle as loud as you can.
Yeah.
This is I've Been in Love by Jungle. You're listening to Sustainable Sounds on Radio 1. Is Sustainable Sounds on Radio 1, and we're here with me, Elliot Bly,
Lily Egan,
and Jodie Evans.
How good. Lily, I would love to talk about your thesis.
Yeah, sure. I'm sure all the listeners would love to hear about my academic work.
Yeah, well, I feel like you're saying that sarcastically, but I think people would genuinely love that.
We'll try it out.
Yeah, so what's the TLDR? What's the pitch?
Yeah, great. So I have been working on a virtual tourism project, and what that means is I've been using virtual reality technology to explore different forms of tourism, and kind of figure out how can we create meaningful experiences for people that probably don't feel the same as going on a trip in person, but might offer a new perspective or a new experience that you actually might not be able to do in person anyway.
Fantastic. And are there examples of this happening already?
Well, there's my thesis.
Wow, of course.
The best one.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess it kind of comes down to what you define as virtual tourism, right?
Yeah,
so there's a lot of different forms of it currently that might not be exactly like what my thesis was, which was a fully immersive 360-degree telepresence virtual reality experience. Right. So what that means is we strap a 360 camera onto a kayak and we live stream in some kind of experience. In my case, it was a guided kayaking tour in the Ocarito Lagoon on the West Coast.
Cool.
And for 15 minutes, you're floating along with a tour guide and he's sort of pointing out the birds and the flora and the fauna and running sort of like an adapted version of their normal kayaking tours that they offer for their business.
And how do you find people respond to it?
Quite differently, but not even generally, overwhelmingly positive. Like, I was really surprised. I ran all the study sessions, so I spoke with every participant, and I can say that every single person at the end said, I really like this. This is cool.
Yeah. And compared to, like, going there and doing it for real
life? Now, that's where there's a bit of nuance. Yeah. Almost nobody said I would do this over going there in real life.
Yeah.
Though, perhaps interestingly, one of the participants, there was only two that had actually been there in real life before, prior to the experiment, and one of them said, in a lot of ways, I kind of prefer this.
Interesting.
And so that was one of the really interesting things that we found working with real tourism operators is maybe in a virtual format, you can avoid some of the negative things that you might do in person. So if you're kayaking, maybe you don't do kayaking a lot. Maybe you're not the most fit. Maybe it's a really windy day. There's a lot of effort that goes into that experience that might make it actually not that good in the end.
True.
You know, you might have to be really paddling on the water. You might get really tired. You might get hungry. You might be hot.
Yeah.
Well, if you do it in virtual reality, you're going to get a perfect experience every time.
Yeah.
So from that perspective, there might be some advantages.
For sure. And of course, if you're doing it in real life, then there are generally a lot of emissions associated with most activities.
100%. Mm-hmm. And that was a big rationale for my thesis in general. And my thesis was part of a larger MB Smart Ideas government grant-funded project. So the government gave all this money to this project, and part of the rationale was, hey, maybe it's a good idea for New Zealand to be investing in exploring novel ways to do tourism in a world where maybe we don't want to be doing as many carbon emissions based travel like flying in planes. What could that look like? And so I really actually think New Zealand is quite ahead of the curve in a lot of this stuff, like kind of dipping my toes into this field and being part of the VR scene a little bit. I definitely think New Zealand could be considered a leader.
Yeah, cool. What other projects have you seen in a similar vein?
Oh man, I mean, one that comes up a lot is also local. Out by the glaciers, the helicopter tour companies, sometimes they can't go out because of inclement weather.
Yeah.
So this really isn't, from my understanding, sustainably motivated. But if they can't fly, they actually had somebody create a virtual reality kind of almost like IMAX 3D dome.
Like the
planetarium.
Planetarium. Yeah.
So they made sort of, I think, a version of the tour like that. And so if people got out there and they couldn't go out, hey, well, at least you can watch this really cool experience video.
True.
Now, we kind of criticized that, saying, like, well, if you get all the way out there, first of all, you've already made the trip, and you're just going to be disappointed. I mean, like, yes, it's something. But we thought, what if they actually toured with that and used that as a tool to explore tourism or teach people education? So I think part of it's making things, and then part of it's knowing where and how to use them and show them to people.
Totally, totally. Fantastic. I was just talking to my friend recently who lives in Norway, and she is planning a big trip to New Zealand without flying, which I think is...
Go on.
So I saw her Instagram story, which was them on a boat from presumably Spain to Morocco. And with the song over the top, which was Sailing on the Atlantic, Cruising to the Other Side. Yeah. Absolute banger. And great to see the international impact of that song. But yeah, I mean, I think it is doable. I had some other friends who looked into it, and I think it's quite challenging to get through the sort of the stans, the sort of that area. And then obviously just a long time on boats after that.
But yeah, you wouldn't be seasick at the end of it. You know how people say that, like, if you just, like, expose yourself, your tolerance will get better? Yeah, maybe that's a way to way to do it.
Definitely.
A little exposure therapy or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, let's play some music. Lily, you had some songs for us.
Oh, man, which one's coming out first?
Up to you.
Oh, okay. So the first one I threw out was Time After Time by Cyndi Lauper.
Absolute banger. This is Sustainable Sounds on Radio 1, 91 FM. Keep it locked. Hey, it's Sustainable Sounds. You're listening to Radio 1. Well, Jody, you're doing a thesis.
Wow. Yeah, possums.
Possums.
Do they have a catchphrase?
Possums.
They should.
What, possums as a species?
Like, who's their marketing person, you know?
Name one species that has a marketing person.
The kiwis. It's like Save the Kiwis.
Yeah, it wouldn't, be like
easy.
That for the possums.
Give me a real challenge.
It would be like, what I've found in my research is it will be just be like, they're invading, they came and they bred and they conquered. And
they're killers.
That's true. Rabbits as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, but of course, these animals have a bit of a bad rap from the language that we use.
Yeah, that was good. so my thesis is I'm looking at, I'm someone who... I did an undergrad in zoology, and I'm really interested in conservation and always have been, but also really interested in how humans in general perceive in different cultural contexts and things, different animals, particularly pests. I've always had like a little bit of an interest in things that people find like yuck. Like I'll never forget, like if ever I see a rat, I'm fascinated. You know, and everyone else will be like, ah! But I'm just like, this is so interesting. I think they're incredible, but like not in like a... love them. I just find it so interesting. And so like with possums, I'm looking at the way that, you know, we can continue our goals as a country towards protecting our biodiversity, but at the same time not kind of foster any inaccurate or like really anthropomorphic, like really just kind of nasty descriptions, to put it lightly, of possums.
If I may interject with a science communications question. So you said they reject anthropomorphism, which is, of course,
which is really interesting.
Yeah, go on.
I think I know where you're going with this. So, yeah, like, a lot of the time we use anthropomorphism to invoke empathy in audiences, to get people to connect with animals, and it can be really, really useful for that.
Like an example?
Yeah, I mean, anything by David Attenborough.
You know, or even like cartoons or plushies.
Absolutely,
you know?
like we naturally want to project. Cute. Like we have I'm sure Lily will be able to tell you about this because she's a psychology guru. but you know, we just naturally project human qualities and to try and connect with animals and even just inanimate objects and things. So, to some extent it's natural, but it's very overt with possums in terms of like a negative anthropomorphism, and it is effective in getting people to kill them. But I'm just kind of arguing that maybe we shouldn't have so much enthusiasm for
murdering animals.
Yeah, exactly.
It was shocking when I first got here. It's two kiwis. I can tell you, as an American, like, the first time I was in the car with somebody and we saw a predator mammal on this road, like, they're swerving and taking, like, really... Yeah. Like, one time I was in the car with a friend and we saw a weasel and he told me he's like, stop the car! So I press and I put it in park and he ran out and dove into the bushes with, like, an umbrella trying to find it and kill it. Like,
God.
The enthusiasm,
No.
But I just want to say, like, it can't be overstated, especially from a foreigner's perspective. Yeah. Like, I was quite surprised.
And I think we're so used to it as Kiwis. Like, I grew up with that so much. I grew up rurally. I used to possum trap and hunt myself and, like, things like that, like school competitions that were about how many possums could you kill and stuff. And, like, you know...
Yeah, and Waitati, do you know about the possum tossing competition?
Yeah. And there's also been,
I don't know about this.
I think it might have been Thai Happy. There was also, like, a dress-up possum, dead possum competition for children, too. So there's been a lot of crazy shit.
Yeah, so in Waitati, which is just 20 minutes out of Dunedin, at the annual AMP show, I don't know if they still do it. I think they actually stopped it because they were like, this is a little bit messed up. But it used to be that they would go out and kill a whole bunch of possums and have them all ready to go on the AMP show, and they'd get members of the community to see how far they can chuck them. And that was like the competition of the day was how far can you...
And it did receive a fair bit of backlash.
Yeah.
And like you said, I think it stopped.
Yeah. But the backlash was like it was definitely far from universal, you know, like at like rodeos and stuff, everyone's like, yeah, this is a little bit messed up. But for the possum tossing, everyone's like, oh, but they're possums.
Yeah, right? I think so. Yeah,
that's a question I have then for you, Jodie, is like, well, what are the implications of these negative projections, and like, why is that so important to like recognize?
Yeah, I think there's quite a few things. Like, the hardest thing for me is narrowing down the focus of my thesis, because I've just been like, wow, there's so much I could talk about here. There's a lot of stuff about New Zealand identity as well, which comes into it. You know, we really identify ourselves with environmental behavior, which is really cool. And I think sometimes that's why we can so passionately get behind like hating pests, because we're really protective of our natural environment, and that, you know, I admire that.
Well, I guess what I'm asking is the way that Kiwis view possums and possum killing good, or is it bad?
Is it needed change?
Yeah, or is it good the way it is?
Asking me about my thesis, I just go off for like ages. And I'm,
well, I want to know that too, but I want to know.
I think it's bad. I think we need to...
a scathing review from Cody Evans, everyone.
Yeah, I'm trying to provide a bit of a middle ground for people.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to say you can support conservation and also not believe that these animals are inherently evil and that they're out to get you, because they're not. They're just breeding and eating. And that is just because we brought them here, because we have this really uncomfortable history of ecological imperialism, bringing animals here and altering the ecosystem as we like. So I'm just kind of arguing that it's not all their fault, guys, and maybe we shouldn't act like it.
So true.
In a nutshell.
I loved it. Mic drop.
Did that explain it all right?
Yeah. Of course, if you do have any questions or thoughts, do text them on in to 0212 Radio 1 or 021.
Except for if you hate me. Don't text that in.
Yeah, don't text I hate Jody, but yeah, don't do just that. About anything else.
Only there. Love for Jody.
Yeah. So the number is 0212723461.
Did we also leak it's Jody's birthday tomorrow yet?
We did not.
Well, if you're going to text anything, it better be happy birthday.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
We'll make sure to pass that on. Fantastic. Let's get a little bit more music. Yeah, that was great. We've got lots of great hot topics of conversation lined up ready to go. So, in the meantime, this is Field of Vision by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. You're listening to Sustainable Sounds on Radio 1.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.